Blog Talk Radio.
Get in the groove and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we lose our soul, if it takes all night long. Come on and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we lose our soul, if it takes all night long. The evening sun is sinking low. The clock on the wall says it's time to go. Plans, and I got plans for you. I'll tell you all exactly what we're all gonna do. Come on and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul, if it takes all night long. Come on and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul, if it takes all night long.
Mine says 12 o'clock and then mine says 3. Time doesn't mean that much to me. Ain't felt as good since I don't know when. Don't know when I'm gonna feel this way again.
So come on, get in the groove and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul, if it takes all night long. Come on and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul, if it takes all night long.
Might be 6 o'clock, it might be 8. It don't matter that it's getting late. We're gonna make the band play one more song. Get in the groove if it takes all night long.
Get in the groove and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul, if it takes all night long. Come on and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul, if it takes all night long.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to Fill My Eyes with Poetry. And I hope everyone's having a wonderful week, and I hope you have an even better weekend to follow. I know I said the same thing, but I really mean what I'm saying. Laurent, what are you doing over there? Crinkling paper? Hello.
Yes, I am. I'm sorry. How you doing? How are the twins?
Oh my God, the twins. Well, the twins. One is cold and one is tired. How's that? Yes, I think that they need to cuddle up under a blanket and go to sleep. That's what I think.
Okay.
But, I guess eventually that'll happen. But anyway, so it's good to have you here. Oh, my God. So, I don't know. What's your weather like up there? I'm cold.
It was 41 degrees this morning and 62 degrees in the bedroom. I about froze.
Wow. You need to turn on the heat just a little bit.
I'm cheap. I'm Uncle Scrooge.
Yeah, yeah, well, whatever. Whatever. You know, you gotta, sometimes you just gotta be comfortable. What's the point of getting sick? That's the way I feel.
Amen.
You know, I mean, you keep yourself from getting a chill at night and stay healthy a little longer. You know, your health is worth a lot more than that that almighty dollar.
I guess I'll just have to start wearing pajamas.
Oh, there you go. Woohoo.
I don't like clothing on when I go to sleep.
Yeah, well, neither do I, but I'll tell you what. The idea that, like, once I'm under a blanket, it doesn't bother me at all. It's when I have to get out from under the blanket is when things bother me. That's a whole different, you know, ballgame. But anyway, we have a nice
little
board of poetry.
So we've got a few pieces on the board tonight.
Yes, we do. Lots of goodies, actually. And just so you know, I just realized that I never made any audios come to life here. So,
How many did you have?
Well, I don't know. I think that I have a couple that I missed, but I'll get them as we go along. You know, that's just the way it happens. Oh, and happy October, by the way. Ain't that amazing?
October 1, that's right.
Yeah. 10/1/21. Not too bad. But, yeah, what a day. I was like, yeah. But it is feeling very chilly. Very chilly.
They say that this winter is going to be unusually cold and snowy.
Wonderful. I can't wait. Woo-hoo. Just can't wait. Thank you.
You won't have long to wait.
Yes, that's just wonderful. I was waiting for that. Look, Frank's talking about your jammies out there. I don't know. Maybe you
said
that.
Well, I would wager that if Frank wears jammies, that they are made of only the finest silk with perhaps a monogram on the pocket front.
There you go. I don't know. They can defeat the purpose of keeping you toasty.
Well, it's that initial impression. Besides, silk slides off the body easily.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Yep. How true. So listen, we have a couple of folks on the line.
We should get them on.
I think so. That way you won't have to keep talking to me. Because I'm cold and I'm tired. I'm just saying. Okay, first off, we have Rex on board. Hello, Rex, and welcome to the party.
Good evening, everybody.
Hey, Rex.
What's doing?
Good to have you, buddy.
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
Good.
Very good. And we have Pam on the line, but I think I saw her say she'd be right back. So let's just try it and see what happens. Hello, Pam.
I am back. I was actually back a few minutes ago, but I just didn't really say anything. Hi, Dean. Hi, Lawrence. Hi, Rex. Good to hear you all.
Hello.
So how goes it?
Oh, it's going wonderful. You're all speaking of weather, and, you know, this is just the time of year that I love northern Wisconsin because it's not too hot, it's not too cold, there's a comfortable breeze, the leaves are beautiful colors, you know. It's just, to me, feel-good weather.
Yeah, that change of season is such a gorgeous thing. It's just gorgeous. Absolutely. No matter what the temperature brings, it's just always... I don't know.
Yeah, but the comfortable temperatures help. I know the changing of season is beautiful no matter what, but being comfortable definitely helps.
Yeah. Well, see, we didn't have comfortable yet this year. We went from, like, warm, really warm, to cold.
Jesus.
Although I have to say, when I went outside today, I was surprised that it was actually beautifully pleasant outside. You know, because I had to go outside and feed the rats. Yeah, I don't know how I got rabbit duty, but I had rabbit duty today. So, you know, it was pretty cold, but it was pretty amazing. Because I was like, darn, I was in the house, and it was so darn cold. And I stepped out on the porch, and it was a little bit balmy. The sun was shining bright, and I went, you know, this really isn't it. But most of the days have not been like that. I don't know, maybe we're going to revert to something nice for a little while. Yes. So anyhow, this is what we got. We got about 22 poems on the board. And, we got plenty to keep us busy. So I hope everybody feels like being busy tonight. Yes. Okay. Well, here goes nothing. Or something. Depends on how you look at it. This one up. And Leroy. Oh, hang on a second. I better make sure I see what the hell I'm putting up. Oh, no. That doesn't seem very long. Let me check. I think that's long enough. Okay. It's a good way to start the show off. Okay, Leroy, I'm going to put this one up for you to read, and this is by Flower Muse.
I approve of the image. Let me start off by saying that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is called Waken the Secret Stranger by Flower Muse. And in the midst of never, while children are asleep, the nightingale comes calling up to the flying geese. Fly north to me, my lovelies, and bring me nature's gift, wearing silk so very dainty. That is my secret wish. Tempest is still coming, so we must make our peace. Tomorrow in that neverland of a sweet and gentle breeze, I'll hold up a marble pedestal where we might share a kiss, drive the wings of longings until all nature sings. Please come before the dawning, and our time flies away, when my tears will find the goose-lined pillow where I rest with lonely head. End poem.
Nice reading.
That was a nice poem. I enjoyed that. Well, in the order of callers, Rex, could we have your comments, please?
It's a lovely piece. The picture is gorgeous, and the voice that comes along with it works so very well. There's that nice touch to that which comes calling in the night, only to leave once the dawn comes rising. Thereby, you get that note to the goose-lined pillow, and that lonely head in the morning. So it's a nice dreamy quality, but it also speaks to that one that comes now and then disappears in the midst of things, or after the midst of things, so to speak.
Well, thank you for that great comment, Rex. And Ms. Pam.
Yeah, I really like this. It's beautifully written. I like how it has a fairy tale like quality, and with the mention of children being asleep and Neverland, it has a kind of innocence to it. And yet, as you get near the end, there's this sadness that speaks. And our time flies away when my tears will find the goose-lined pillow where I rest this lonely head. It gets just such a feeling of missing somebody whose touch and kiss you can no longer physically feel because they passed on. Beautiful, heartfelt writing, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Great comment. Yeah, the near rhymes are very attractive in this poem. And in the midst of never, while children are asleep, the nightingale comes calling up to the flying geese. I find that near rhymes are easier to deal with sometimes in strict rhyming. It gives you more latitude, and it brings about the very same effect of the rhyme. And the flow and the pace on this is very nice. And the imagery of the nightingale calling to the flying geese is a very appealing one, with the impending tempest to come and a limited amount of time. Please come before the dawning, and our time flies away. That's very lovely. Well done. Jean, I don't know if you're available for a comment.
I am. I think this Dan did a lovely job with this piece. I think it was a great reflection of the prompt itself. These Michael Parks images, I just, I don't know. It was just wonderful to use as prompts because everybody really wrote beautifully to them. But, yes, I think it was a wonderful reflection to the prompt. I thought it was beautifully written, and I really loved it. I did. It had a certain... I don't know. When I look at the image has like a certain quality about it, and I think that the right actually carries that same feel. And I love that, I think he hit it spot on in that reflection. So great job. Great job. Woo-hoo. Okay. So now it's back to me. Okay. Here we go. Okay. Copy. Paste. Okay. Pam, can I get you to read this one for me?
Absolutely. All right. This is Claudiophobia by Reflection Shadow, and it goes like this. I have taken my first brave steps, not into the mouth of lions, not the world at my fingertips swirling around as the colors of the moon that twirl bound, but by the body of words etched into stones, their truth somehow faded now, and evil moves around to darken the blue skies. And still I lay unbound as the oddest tapestry that hangs above the pillar of salt, deluge of my time as wanderers through the narrows of lost minds that hide the demons of the daytime. I summon the blanket of white lepers to cover the landscape. Shall I speak from four corners of your mouth? Much that I have eaten this mouth of whiteness and blackness? No, where you show no signs of age, time, days, years, life, I only take a grain and mourn it. And there is a spike in my hand, and I swirl upwards where wolves become like angels, and the towers of cerebral thoughts collapse. As I wipe away the web of an old clock, nobody remembered to whine. I, in another time, listen to the ocean inside. End poem.
Wow.
That was a beautiful read, Pam. Thank you so much. This is a fascinating poem. I've taken my first brave steps, not into the mouth of lions, not the world at my fingertips swirling around as the colors of the moon that twirl abound, but by the body of words etched into stones. That's such a powerful image to begin the piece with. And he splits this up, chapter 2, myth, chapter 3, tides. And then at the end, in another time, listen to the ocean inside. And in between, we seem to have a poem that deals with a wanderer through the narrows of lost minds that hide the demons of the daytime. I'm fascinated with the line, as some of the blanket of white lepers to cover the landscape. There's a great deal of this that feels very surreal, very abstract, certainly worth a couple of reads. Before a really powerful comment would work on this for me. But let me go to Rex and ask him what he thinks.
The fact that Reflection went with chapters, Utopia, Myth, and then Tides kind of hits on that notion of the Utopia angle is that what everybody wishes for. I mean, that granted thought from the heavens of where the gods reside, so to speak. She hits on that note. I've taken my first brave steps, not into the mouth of lions, not the world of my fingertips swirling around at the pillars of the moon that twirl abound, but by the body of words etched in the stones, their truths, somehow vapid now, and evil moves around. There's a quiet note to understanding you might want utopia, but evil still moves around, and the sort of the words etched in the stones are those long lost truths that now no longer hold any meaning. Now, the second one, myth, kind of hits on that notion of how everything rolls through time, and it what once might have been truth or part truth now becomes myth because it's layered over the ages with the thoughts of everybody else expounding upon what came before. And I did like that thought of the blanket white leopards to cover the landscape. I thought that was a nice quiet note to having a snowbound relief, maybe as a cleanser. The tides angle, she hits on the mouth of whiteness and blackness. There's a note to yin and yang. And then there's the thought of looking back again, age, time, days, years, where there's no sign of age. That hits on the notion of that which has always been. It's kind of like Earth's much, so to speak. And then again, a little bit of evil, where wolves become like angels and the towers of cerebral thought collapse. There's that notion of being lost in the moment, where what once we held as self-evident no longer walks within that realm. And the thought with the old clock is, hey, we keep moving forward, but we don't ever remember to wind the clock from the past that we know we should remember, because if we don't, there's a repeat to that effect. And I did like the last three lines because they kind of hint on that notion of moving inside oneself to get back to that truth which once was held.
Bravo. Beautiful comment, Rex. Thank you. Pam, please.
Well, I have to say just, wow, it's really hard to follow Rex after he comments that well, but I'll just share my thoughts. I really like how he used a lot of biblical imagery and references. And with the lines where he says, I have taken my first brave steps not into the mouth of lions, not the will of my fingertips, but by the body of words etched into stones. It really kind of makes me think about the whole idea of being hyper-focused on following the laws etched in stone, or even if you're the one writing the words, creating a universe beyond the physical. I really like the, and I still I lay unbound as the oddest tapestry that hangs above the pillars of salt, deluge of my times as wander through the narrows of lost mind. I feel like this is somebody who sees an opportunity for humankind to like open themselves up to possibilities beyond what they see with their narrow thinking. And then I really like what he says, shall I speak from four corners of your mouth, or you show no signs of age? I only take a grain and mourn it, and there is a spike in my hand. That really speaks of not being the one who drove the spike into the person who was trying to give so much. And I don't feel like, I feel like there's this kind of idea of trying to get a world to understand the gifts that are out there in the universe, but failing so miserably that you almost become like them, it's definitely one of those poems that's really, you just read it over and over again and keep getting new thoughts, and I really like that, so it's very well done.
Yeah, there are a lot of the paths to follow, and it's, I think you acquitted yourself just fine, Pam. And Jean?
You know, I thought this was a pretty neat piece. I liked the way, I think, Laurent, you were the one who said something about it being slightly abstract. I think the piece is just as abstract as the image. You have rocks floating in the sky with leopards laying on them. You have leopards stepping out onto rocks in the sky with nowhere for them to go. And I find that to be intriguing in the image itself. And I think that there's some of that captured throughout this whole poem. And I think that it was really a nicely written piece. It was clever. It was it brought you to think, you know, about the image itself. And I like that. I really do. And I liked how they did it in vignettes of sorts. And, yeah, it was pretty amazing. So great job. Great job. Reflection, shadow. Always good work from you. Thank you so much for sharing. Okay. I think I'm going to read the next one. I know, don't all go falling on the floor. You know, I'm trying to be good here. Let's see. This one is called Ancient Spectator by, I believe, Richard Ennis. Okay, let me try that button. There we go. And Ancient Spectators. Goddesses Leto, Hera, and Artemis watch closely from Mount Olympus. Ordered by Zeus, they must attend, reports back, their task to send. Riding the covered black of the rhino lays Hera, goddess of family. Cougar nearby, her belt yellow, stands Leto, goddess of modesty. Artemis rides atop the rhino's horn, waiting for this day since she was born, goddess of the moon, wildlife, and hunting. Artemis is both curious and cunning. On the rhino's ear stands a magical bird, watching the action, they speak not a word. A snapshot frozen in ancient Greek folklore. Three goddesses watched the great Trojan War. End poem.
Well, that was an excellent read, my dear. I have to
Thank
say
you.
That I find the image provocative and evocative. The story itself is steeped in the mythology of our past. The Trojan War was of great interest to the gods, I guess, and Zeus needed his spies. But the pick of Leto, Hera, and Artemis I find very interesting, as well as the symbolism of the rhino's horn, which is being set on in a way that I find somewhat delectable as well. For those of you who are familiar with the Trojan War, there was an awful lot going on, and gods did take sides, I think. When they possibly should not have. Zeus always kept his eye on things, and he always had his people to do it for him. I can't wait to see what Rex has to say about this. Rex?
Actually, I find this cleverly drawn, considering the picture, and offering up the three goddesses as part of the scenery. And you're right about the that third one, Artemis, right atop the rhino's horn, waiting for the day since she was born. There is kind of an intimate note to that stanza all by itself, considering the picture and its layout. But the thought of sitting and watching as spectators, as if this was a sport to behold, and for the gods it was. So you get that nice feeling of intimacy with the three ladies playing their little touches to magic and mysticism and rooting for whom they would root for, and then offering it up as that thought in the last stanza, three goddesses watched the great Trojan War with a nice end slot, because say the truth, I probably would not have thought of going that route, and this was done quite well.
Yeah, you're right about the ending. It provides a very, I don't want to say convenient, but a very interesting point to stop, because it immediately leads the reader in other directions. Sometimes I get the feeling that the gods were always playing a vast game of chess on which they watch human chess pieces move around, sometimes taking a part in the action. They were manipulators. Pam, how about your comment, dear?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this write. I thought it flowed nicely. And I like that he named the different goddesses, like chose different goddesses from Greek mythology, and then had them watching the war. And so it had that sense of them not being involved, you know, not, you know, making any decisions, but rather just like very, you know, curious about the outcome. And I like, too, that he made sure to fit the bird, which, you know, sometimes when it comes to paintings, we don't fit in the little details, but I thought adding in that nice, that touch about it being a magical bird was a nice touch. So it's excellent right and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean?
Okay, well, I think that this was a great piece. I thought it was a great tale told to this image. I loved all the notes he hit in the prompt, in this prompt. I thought it was well done. So excellent job, Richard, and thanks for joining the contest. I appreciate it. Okay. Well, now, where do I go now? Rex, I think I'm going to get you to the next one. Yes, I am. If you would be so kind. And it's by Daniel Deschino.
All right. Styrofoam Cup by Daniel Deschino. Lost be not a state of being, but a definition for my troubled soul. Too many directions for a directionless mind. Too many thoughts in a thoughtless world. I am but a styrofoam cup made by modern society, used for a purpose and discarded on the streets, to float through the sewers of the world and be lost at sea, forever drifting as the wind blows. To see the stars and understand and ride the waves for even an instant and set my sail to peaceful shores. But the wind blows me so easily because I'm frail. The ocean carries me freely because I'm hollow. So I live for those quiet nights when the waters are still and hope to ride the wake of a passing ship to recycle through their turbulent blades. End poem.
Wonderful read, Rex. Thank you. I like the idea of a styrofoam cup being used as a metaphor. Sometimes a styrofoam cup, as light as it is going to escape the problems that a heavier object might encounter simply because it's easily moved and cast aside. Pam, can we start with you, please?
Absolutely. Yeah, I too really appreciated and enjoyed the fact that he used the styrofoam cup, as a metaphor. And I like when it almost took on a personification. I really like, I am but a styrofoam cup made by modern society, used for purposes discarded on the streets. That part there really made me think of, like, the homeless veterans, people who are used for the purpose of going off to war for defending people's freedoms and rights, and then, you know, discarded on the street. I also really like the imagery that the wind blows me so easily because I'm frail, the ocean carries me freely because I'm hollow. So I live those quiet nights when the waters are still. That whole idea to me of, you know, just feeling like there's nothing left and feeling like you have nothing solid within yourself to hang on to. So all you can hope is that there's one day at a time you find that a peace in your surroundings. So a powerful and thoughtful life and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Rex?
Well, I like the thought of the styrofoam cup. That first stanza hits on that sort of not being grounded, so to speak. Too many directions for a directionless mind. Too many thoughts in a thoughtless world. There's a pull and push in that stanza itself. I did like the second one. It holds up that notion of the styrofoam cup being being manipulated, being molded, and then being tossed aside once the mold no longer fits the idea in the moment. Now, the back end of this, so I look for those quiet nights when the waters are still and hope to ride the wake of a passing ship to recycle through their turbulent blades. Now, there's a notion in that one of peace in the moment where the turbulence comes from proper thought in the moment. Those turbulent blades of the ship, the recycled angle is being born again to something that actually means something as opposed to just being a castaway.
I do agree with you. The idea of those blades to me seems like life. Life is full of turbulence, and there are many ships that pass by, and the wake tosses us, especially when we're light like a cup. The rebirth, yes, I see that angle. But those blades can chew you up if you're not careful, just like life can. Jean, how about you?
I think this was a wonderful piece. I enjoyed the metaphor, you know, as everyone's already hit on. I thought it was very well written. The imagery was great. And I think the thoughts behind this piece were very clever and well expressed. I really do. I think that it's I like that last three lines as well. You know, so I live for those quiet nights when the waters are still and hope to ride the wake of a passing ship to recycle through their turbulent blades. You know, I mean, really when you think of kind of the end of life, you know, to have it be peaceful and quiet and, you know, to recycle, you know, through the turbulent blades is one way to put it. But, I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know what the word is I was going to use, but I blew it. You know, it's just a matter of, yeah, never mind. That word is gone. It is totally gone. But I really like this piece very much. It is. It's gone. But a wonderful job, Daniel, and I want to thank you for putting it in for tonight. I really liked it a lot. Clever piece. I will think of that word in the middle of the next poem, I'm sure. That's just the way it happens. Okay. Let's see what piece I have next. Okay, Pam, can I get you to read this one, hon? Irene 4748.
Yes. And this is Black and White by Irene 4748, and it goes like this. Black and white often hive together, white being light and black being bright, complementing each other as the white puts on her head on the wide chest of black meat, trusting him as she surrenders to the mighty black angel in the coat of a jaguar, making the perfect couple of light and shadow, glowing even in hollow and withstanding even in light glow, for now they are no more two, but one nurturing their elegance. Don't go by looks, follow the instincts, for opposites attract and like poles repel. Believe in self, complement each other well, as you two entwine as one in the temple of God in heaven. This is love born beyond our town into heavenly bound, whose limits are unknown. Know this truth. Beyond all doubt, it is worth for life to move forth, for one rules, other subdues, only to live together as one forever. End poem.
Nice.
Thank you, Pam.
Nice.
That was a great read. Nice. Rex, I'll ask you to start us off.
All right. This walk that yin and yang thought of black and white, the light and the dark, they complement each other. And he rolls on that thought well, like this, on the white chest of black maid, trusting him as she surrenders. And then that following them to the mighty black angel in the coat of a jaguar, making the perfect couple of light and shadow. There's that note of understanding the difference where the light walks and where the dark angles. There are always shadows in between, and one must transverse those sections of self so one doesn't obliterate the other while the other darkens the other one totally. So it's a nice thought of keeping the balance between the two and understanding yourself in that matter with the acceptance of both those sides.
Thank you, Rex. I know you're going to pick up on the yin and the yang of it. It's interesting that he has the woman, in this case, being the one who surrenders to the male, one assumes. I like on the wide chest of black mate, because if we're talking about chess, and it seems like it, because black and white are also the colors of the chess pieces, uses the word mate, made, of course, being the final surrender in chess. And she surrenders him because apparently he has won the game, or she chooses to cooperate. And it's that cooperation, the belief in self, in order to be able to surrender and trust another one. The last stanza, for one rules, other subdues, only to live together as one forever. The perfect couple does blend into one most of the time. They've learned how to live together by being gracious enough to one another, to accept the right position at the right time, and let one or the other make a decision, perhaps, or choose how to live or what to do. Very interesting back and forth as two entwine in one in the temple of God in heaven. That's a lovely note on which I will ask Pam to run through her comments.
Yeah, I thought this had some beautiful lines about how opposites attract and a sense of balance within a relationship. And I really liked, for now they are no more two but one, nurturing their elegance. And also I found that those last, like, three stanzas really flowed nicely. And I really also liked, there is love born beyond our town into heavenly bounds, whose limits are unknown. It had a wonderful spiritual feel to it, as well as the idea of the connection and the balance between the man and the woman. So excellent light and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean?
Well, I thought this was a great piece. I really did. I love the image that they wrote to. And I think it was a clever take on that prompt completely. Like, there's just wonderful lines throughout, and I think everybody has really hit on some of the more obvious things, you know, the black and the white and the chess and everything else, and I think that is just, you know, a super angle to write on. So, yeah, just a really, really well-done piece, and, yeah, great job. Great job, Rain, so thank you so much. Mm-hmm. You like it. Okay, so for my next magic trick. I guess I don't have another magic trick. Okay, let me try it again. Okay. I'm going to put Frank's piece up. And hopefully, I've been carrying this one forward a few times, so. Hopefully I have still the right sound set up. And here we go. This is called The Lady in Red. All right. This should be it.
I've never seen you look so beautiful as you are tonight, so radiant with the seduction of the moonlight glow stirred, like a fresh red rose I pluck from the lush garden of blooms, with the stimulating scent of your alluring perfume I smell. I just want to undress you slowly with my romantic stare, see the luminous sparkle of your sable eyes shine its color, and explore beyond the gentle ruffles of your silk dress worn, dance with you under the heat of scarlet sheets, flesh to flesh, until our toes curl together and our lips burn in the fire of passion and our exotic whispers of lovers reach beyond an erotic crescendo with the Spanish sounds of the musical beat in the background as we toast and sip from the taste of a delicious cherry kiss. I could drink from the sangria of your desirable wet lips now, and I would always want to quench my insatiable thirst, unveil the lustful secrets of your natural beauty concealed, discover the deep constellation of the stars twinkling in your eyes. I've never seen you look so sexy and soulful as you are tonight, for I could dance all night long with the sensuality of your skin. You are the luster of a splendid red ruby and an ivory pearl. You are the purity of the striking image of my lady in red. Eres la belleza del color del amor, un rojo tan puro y tan natural, y tu cuerpo es mi cobija. En la noche, tus besos, la fuente de mi placer. Mi amor, you are the beauty of the color of love, a red so pure and so natural. In your body is my blanket of the night, your kisses, the fountain of my pleasure. Mi amor. Oh, mi amor. You are the lady in red. Mi amor. In the comb.
Well, we had the pleasure, I think, of reading this roughly a week ago, and it's such a great piece. There's some lovely lines in this, the first of which in my mind was, like a fresh red rose I plucked from the lush garden of blooms, with the stimulating scent of your alluring perfume I smell. There's, I was looking for that moment of touching, and found it in the moment when the toes curl together and in the taste of a delicious cherry kiss, and then discover the deep constellation of the stars twinkling in your eyes, which can certainly be that infinite moment when you read your future in her eyes. I thought this was a marvelous rite. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I do remember this, right, because I remember we were talking about how he used the color red, like, in different ways, like the mention of the flowers, the mention of the sangria, and the cherry kiss, and that really stood out to me because it worked well with the prompt, but used the color red in creative ways. I thought it was wonderful use of imagery. As always, he balances out his background music well with his reading. And the other thing I liked about this, and which is one thing I tend to favor in sensual rite, is the use of music and dance as a reference to the sensual connection. Just an excellent rite and very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. And Rex, how about you?
It reminds me of Eric Clapton, Wonderful Tonight. The depth and breadth of that song, he's taken and drawn out the rest of it for this rite, rolling through the rest of the evening and everything that comes from the song itself, but progressive all the way through, running the seduction and the sensuality out of that song and through his voice down to everything that strikes him. I know it's not about the song, but I got that You Look Wonderful Tonight as kind of the thought to where I was going. And he drew that well from start to finish.
I like the fact that you threw Clapton in there. There are elements of that song that work with this very well, very reminiscent. Thank you very much, Rex and Gene. I got a feeling she's doing a SoundCloud or she's
I think she said she'd be right back.
Yeah, she's doing a SoundCloud.
No, I actually came back. I had to step away.
Oh.
But the song was actually carried over from one of my shows, I think, on 924. And apparently Frank must have put it on Lou's show on Monday. And I did not catch when I moved the audio. So otherwise I would not have played it again tonight because I think 3 days apart is not much. But it was a great great write and a wonderful audio. And, you know, thanks a lot for sharing, Frank. I'm kind of glad everybody enjoyed it. You know, great work. Okay. So, Laurent, I have one for you. And by Joseph Moon.
This is called The Human Ghost, Joseph Moon. I wish to write about beauty and love and their tent on the human heart. Instead, I trod amongst those who died at their birth and have not yet been buried. I feel as if I had been banished into a faraway shore where life is as cold as ice and as ashen as ashes and as silent as the soil that awaits the human ghost. I see every day on both sides of a dead-end street. End poem. Wow. What a meaningful brevity, the human ghost. Rex, could you begin, please?
It's melancholy. There's a lament to the thought, especially with that opening stanza. I wish to write about beauty and love and their attempt on the human heart. Instead, I trod amongst those who died at their birth and have not yet been buried. There's that notation of being in between worlds, wanting the angle of beauty and love, but sitting within the aftermath where death still lingers because of the pain, or maybe it's the actuality of death. But either way, the in between world kind of sucks. You kind of sit in limbo, and that's the last stanza. I see every day on both sides of a dead end street. There's that lamentable thought of wanting to be and longing to be within that beauty and love, but knowing it is not meant to be, so to speak, at this point in time.
Thank you, Rex. I wonder if this isn't a poem about someone who has lost a child and is somehow living in the moment of that loss, perhaps before burial, I don't know. But if you ever lost a child, you could feel as if you had been banished into a faraway shore where life is as cold as ice and as ashen as ashes. I like the idea of the human ghost. It works very, very well for the thought. Pam, please.
Yes, good to see Joseph Moon writing. He always has the most beautiful brevity. And I kind of, too, thought of stillborns, babies that are born dead. And what I was thinking that the line where it says, who died at their birth and have not yet been buried, wasn't necessarily about just the act of burying, but the act of something to, like, a baptism or something that would allow the spirit to continue on into the next realm, it feels to me like somebody who's it has a very haunting element to it, in the idea that this ghost is tied down to doing a job and cannot be released. And cannot do what they want to do, which is to express themselves about the unfairness of love and life. I think it's just a beautiful light and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean?
Well, you know, I think it was a great job done. Emotions were nicely expressed. And I enjoyed the piece. It was a wonderful brevity, for sure. And those, as Pam said, always comes through with those. And, it was a great job. So thank you, Joseph. Always appreciate you sharing. Absolutely. Okay. Rex, I have the next one for you, hon.
All right. Empty Calories by Jack Tomkovic. I almost miss the short-haired Honduran girl, gazing as I slowly peeled back the silvery inner wrapper and began to eat my Hershey bar with almonds. Her mouth twitched, her hands trembled. Can eating a candy bar be a capital crime? I'd like to say my face slowed, my hard head softened, that I turned and gave her what was left. But this poem only wrote my guilt after. End poem.
Beautiful read. I think we've all had moments when we can be unconsciously selfish, and then afterwards that moment eats at us, and we blame ourselves, we castigate ourselves for not doing the right thing at the right time. The way he described the girl, her mouth twitched, her hands trembled, and then the question, can eating a candy bar be a capital crime? It can be. A young person who sees something like that and wishes for it with all her heart, and then you sit there and you eat it slowly, it's almost like torture. Torture is a capital crime. And this is a poem, a massive poem, or a poem of massive guilt. It really rings true. I like this a great deal. Pam, please.
Yeah, I thought this was a wonderful and thought-provoking write. And, I think that when you have these teaching moments, these moments where you can look back and learn from them and become a better person by them, and just, you know, share those moments that are so brief, but they make an impact on us, I think that's an important part of poetry. So I just really like the straightforward nature of this write and how it really makes an impact. So it's very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Rex?
The title, Empty Calories, offers up that thought, nibbling in the moment. And then you get into that angle with the girl, and you hit on the back end of this. There's no satisfaction in guilt once one has devoured that which somebody else looked at extremely hungrily, so to speak, mouth watering, and there was not a turn of phrase to offer something of that to the little girl to begin with. So I did like the back end of this. It was kind of a nice that's where the bite sits. Gave her what was left, but this poem only wrote my guilt after.
Thank you, Rex. Well said. Jean?
Well, wow, I have to kind of get my grip here. What? Yeah. You know what? I'm not even going to attempt to go back and find the poem and pull it up. I want to thank for participating. I appreciate that. And the next poem that I have up to read is, wow, totally lost myself in hunting around. This is called I Do Confess the End by Which We're Faced by Titus Llewellyn. And I have a SoundCloud for that, so let me, maybe I don't. Let me try another one for right now. Shoot. Okay, well, I'm going to put up Sawa's, I guess, because I know I have one for hers. So sorry. I'll have Titus is ready next time. And here we go. Okay. And here goes Salas.
Yes, the one. Every day, chaque jour, every day, I get lost in surprising colors. I taste diffusing sweetness with aroma. Sleeping flowers surround the wall of my soul. A golden butterfly flutters. It awakens my smile. My heart cradles. The bluebird flying in the sky, that beauty of leafless trees delight my eyes. Chaque jour, je me perds dans les couleurs surprenantes. Je déguste le goût arôme qui se diffuse dans l'air. Les fleurs closes entourent la muraille de mon âme. un papillon doré bat ses ailes et mon sourire s'éveille. Mon cœur se berce avec un oiseau bleu qui vole dans le ciel. Les arbres effeuillés ravissent mes yeux avec leur beauté morte et je palpite. And the spoon.
As always, a beautiful sound cloud, a beautiful read. Pam, could you start us off, please?
Yes, absolutely. This is beautiful. It's one of those brevities that each line is gorgeous, and it's hard to separate any one of them. But what I particularly like about this is that she throws in the other senses besides what you just look at. Like, I taste diffusing sweetness of aroma. And I felt like that was just really beautiful there. And then I liked Dead Beauty of Leafless Trees Delights My Eyes. And the reason I like that is because when you put that with the rest of the poem, it shows a real sense of an appreciation for the beauty of life, for death, and for the changing of the seasons, literally and metaphorically. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Yeah, I got the real sense of someone who is so connected to nature and the world around her that she is almost as if she was connected with nerve endings, and she's able to take in with all her senses the beauty of the world around her, and someone who is so connected that literally, and I throb, I think is an important line, which I believe was left out of the SoundCloud. Every day, I throb, and I really do like that. Rex, please.
It's a peace within self that allows one to actually breathe in the essence of whatever the day brings, no matter the season. No matter what part of that season, within the season itself, it offers up that notation to actually walking through that moment in life in reality, as opposed to that which most offer up as a thought to what real life is daily. If it hits on the notions, all right, sleeping flowers surround the wall of my soul, that hits on a notion to winter. But it also offers up, there's a nice caress with that around the wall of my soul. The golden butterfly set up that note to a spring where everything comes alive once more. And even the back end, Dead Beauty of Leafless Trees delights my eyes, because there is a nice sense of surreality when the trees have gone bare and they look dead, but they're still full of life. So the notation of life singes all the way through this. And to finish off with, and I throb, also gives that notation to life as it abounds.
Thank you, Rex. Well said. And Jean?
I think that this was a beautiful poem by Sawa, as always. And the read was great. Just always, as always, it was soft, it was delicate, and it was well done. So excellent job, Sawa. And speaking of Sawa, Sawa's on the line. Hello, Sawa.
Hello. Hello, everyone. Sorry, I just...
Hey, Sawa.
Hello, everyone. I had a problem with my earbuds, so hopefully it will work. Let's see. It's not echoing, right?
I hear you.
Perfect.
Okay.
Well, you've impressed Robbie, Sawa. He says that your poem makes him want to read Baudelaire.
Oh, thank you.
Mm. Absolutely. Okay, so I guess I'll go and grab Titus's again because I have solved that problem. Tell you, sometimes I wonder about me. Here we go. And here goes the SoundCloud.
I do confess the end by which we're faced. It has nothing to do with God, the clearest conscience, a selfish sod I know I am. He's one of theirs, or so I thought, a prayer if one compares. But where indeed death is amen placed, I do confess the end by which we're faced, and not a worth of love had I embraced until late in life. Forgiveness must have come, when God indeed was kind that maybe some receive this kind of blessing having yearned, to find my faith salvation having learned, to comfort first the soul, that special friend. Some strength is all that's needed, doesn't end, to think the hour, a time we all have left, our promises beholden to bereft.
Elegant piece. What a wonderful read. I'd like to start with Rex, please.
That's quite the thought up top. It has nothing to do with God. The clearest conscience, a selfish sod, I know I am. He's one of theirs, or so I thought, a prayer, if one compares. I like the rhyme he's got rolling through this. It's off-centered pace, so it fits in well. And rolls nicely off the tongue, but also he's got a great end rhyme as well that rolls through this. Now the back end of this defines faith salvation, having learned to come first to soul, that special friend. There is a notation that walking through life as that selfish thought, as he puts it, thinking of oneself and not understanding the value that comes when you bring somebody else into your orbit, and then you find that on the back end of this, some strength is all that's needed. Doesn't end to think the hour, a time we all have left, our promises be holding to the breath. That comes through even those with hard souls or hard hearts find themselves one day with the benefit of something that they thought they would never have to begin with.
I couldn't agree more, and I find that reinforced absolutely in the lines, but where indeed death is amen placed, I do confess the end by which we're faced, and not a worth of love had I embraced until late in life. Very good observation, Rex. And Sawa, how about you, dear?
Oh, I love Titus' writing. He's so elegant, as you said, and he always touch on the truth in his poem, speak about the truth with you. Who's not going to die and how he approaches it. It's kind of personal, but we can all relate there in a way or another. And I see that the word, and she did an amazing job turning to something very deep and profound.
Thank you, Zoa and Pam.
My pleasure.
Oh, I thought this is just absolutely beautiful. I thought it was a great use of the word bank. And I really like, and not a word of love had I embraced until late in life. Forgiveness must have come when God indeed was kind, that maybe some received this kind of blessing. I like the whole idea of you know, receiving the blessing of love and seeing it for what it is and appreciating it for what it is. So a beautiful write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Yeah, Titus writes in a way that I guess not many people do. He's extremely skilled in form and rhyme and metaphor and image. And he writes in the purest of classic ways. I always admire his work. So well done. Jean, please.
Well, I think Titus did an excellent job with this piece. I think it was a wonderful poem, and what a wonderful use of the word bank. If he hadn't shown us a word bank, I don't think any of us would have ever known. It would have just, you know, been this wonderful poem. So I think that says a lot. But, yep, and I'm glad I got it in there. It was on my desktop. I got about halfway. But wonderful work, Tony, and thanks for sharing that with us. I really appreciate it. Okay. Now, Miss Pam, can I get you to read the next one for us?
Absolutely.
Awesome sauce. Thank you very much.
Have you posted it? And I just need to refresh.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Okay.
I'm not sure where I put it. So. That might be it. Thanks, Laurent. Because I started thinking maybe I put it somewhere else.
All right. This is Beyond the Veil by Linda MB, and it goes like this. I shed the fragile cloth I thought was my abiding armor. Cloud veil fall, lifting me away from every solid self-debasing task you asked of me. My only hope is following the sunset when she deigns to rise, to journey far away from everything my window lets me hold with its seraphic portal. Who are you to take me from my comfort? Who are you to strip from me from the safety of my virgin home? Who are you to force apart my weakened limbs where no resistance dwells? And who are you to make me whore to all your brackish, turgid dreams? End poem.
Wow. With such a gentle voice as the anvil struck with a hard hammer. And boy, oh boy, and this one hammers. Who are you to strip from me? Who are you to strip from me from the safety of my virgin home? Who are you to force apart my weakened limbs where no resistance dwells? Oh my. This is a very special piece. I really like the subtle poison that is ready to be injected into this guy. It's damn amazing. Rex, please.
It is a touch of darkness, but it hits on the note of obsession because it opens up that first stanza. I shed the fragile cloth I thought was my abiding armor. Cloudfall, lift me away from every sullied self-debasing task you asked of me. There is that note of understanding the obsession itself, as well as that the one who was actually offering up the thought to debasement. But yet there seems to be an innate knowledge of understanding that and still walking within that note. So the back end of obsession could come as not as this as being the real darkness of what it is, but the underlying play of two who would actually walk within this realm equally in the moment and accept that which is going on.
Thank you, Rex.
Role play.
Pam, please.
Yeah, this is one of those rites that takes a really sharp turn near that gets to the end. Like, it's got it starts out with kind of a sad tone, and then it gets progressively more angry. I really like how she says in the end, I shed the fragile cloth I thought was my abiding amour. Cloud fall, lifting me away from every solid self-debasing task. You know, it doesn't seem to be just about obsession. To me, it really seems to be about a relationship where there's control and manipulation. And, you know, there's a real sense of wanting to escape but not being able to escape. And finding that the only sense of comfort is being able to look out the window and daydream. And I like how it gets progressively more confrontational in the whole idea that it becomes about, you know, about confronting the person who is the abuser, is the controller, is the one who is obsessed in an unhealthy way. And so just a powerful rite and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Sawa, your comment, please.
I like how in the second part where she repeats, who are you, like daring, who dare you. It's almost like an answer for the first part. You ask of me my only hope. And then she just, boom. How dare you ask for me to do that? And she just keeps repeating, who are you to strip me from my home and losing home and so on. So I think this is really very profound and very, very strong, very powerful response to the abuse.
Thank you, Salwa.
Okay.
I think we have hit on everyone. Back to you, Jean.
Okay, well. Linda, I thought this was quite an exceptional piece. At first, I didn't catch the actual right, you know, before the last show. And when I went back and I read it again on my way to putting it on the board for tonight, I was kind of like, wow, that says something completely different. And I found it intriguing that this image was the prompt for this piece. And I thought it was well done. I don't know, it just kind of caught me from a couple different directions. So nice work there, absolutely.
That was a swift departure. It sounds like she may have dropped. Can anybody look in the room? You there?
I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here. I don't know. I thought I was talking to you still. I didn't even know I was on hold. Okay, so I put the next one up for you, if you don't mind. Thank you.
Yes, I'd be honored. Oblivion by Casey Day. She was fiercely uncompromising and so broke the fetters binding her of the earth and floated into oblivion and the foam. I hope I pronounced the word right. I'm sorry, I'm not sure.
I'm having a great deal of difficulty hearing you, Sawa. I don't know if anyone else is having the same problem, but you might want to get just a little closer to the phone.
Oh, I'm sorry. It must be I have new earbuds. I'm trying to figure out how to use them. I'm sorry about that.
No, you're much better now. You're coming through nice and clean.
Yeah, I fixed them. Thank you. I'm so sorry about that.
The contest that this poem was in, poem in one sentence, I think is a very intriguing premise onto which to write a poem. One gets the sense of someone being disappointed in someone else and left that individual and floated into oblivion, floated into the future, if you will. It's an interesting comment in the comment section that I will not read, but perhaps there's a hint of the truth there. Rex, please.
Well, the thought with uncompromising also hits on that note of unyielding. And breaking the tethers binding her to the earth offers up that idea of there being nothing here. So the thought of you float into oblivion, there's that existence of total darkness in oblivion, and maybe there one can find a little bit of peace.
Thank you, Rex. And Pam?
Yeah, I found this a really intriguing write. First of all, I liked the style, the whole idea of the challenge of writing a poem in one sentence. I found that there was kind of both a positive and a negative aspect. On one hand, the line, she was fiercely uncompromising, reminded me of the quote, and I can't remember who it's by, that says, "Well-behaved women rarely make history." And I thought that was really a positive. And but then when it ends in the word oblivion, tethered, finding and floated into oblivion, I felt like that was a word that kind of conveyed a sense of loss, a sense of no longer feeling like you knew what was going on. So just a really wonderful, thought-provoking write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. I, too, was thinking about the word oblivion It could easily mean the oblivion of everyone else who doesn't know where she is. She may know precisely where she is, but if she has disappeared into the oblivion, she's merely a strange cipher that no one sees anymore. Jean, how about you?
I don't know. I thought this was a very interesting couple lines, you know. I thought it was nicely done. I thought it was clever. You know, oblivion. Well, which definition did she choose? To me, you know, she cut herself loose from Earth because there was nothing there for her. And oblivion, well, that's the great universe in my mind. But what do I know? But, yeah, it was a nicely done piece, Casey, and thanks for sharing with us. Most definitely. Okay. So, Laurent, I have one for you.
All right. Robbie's poetry offers us percussive heartbeat.
That's not what I put up. Whoa. Hang on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I put that. That wasn't what I meant to put up. I put your piece after that. Sorry. Okay. Sorry. Okay, whenever you're ready, you can read your piece.
Okay, there we go. This is called When Next I Lay Close to Thee. Against list of sky and boil of sun, I lean broad-shouldered to my yoke, to the plot of land on which I'll die. It's twining ivy, my morning cloak. A small part of me is a merry stream, another a flower-strewn glade. More of me crosses hill and dale. Some rests in forest shade. An open field of good brown earth, the course and plow I split in twain. This be where my pulse resides, as I harvest life through might and main. I will crack no whip nor raise my voice, for the horse knows me as his friend. Tis grain and oats and rub him down, from noble mane to long-tailed end. He has a few more fields to till, and I but a few summers more, before he gallops in Elysian fields, or I follow near where angels soar. Soft, the sky bleeds dust of red, tall mountains trimmed with gold, deep blue twilight augurs night, hunter's moon and orange. No painter's brush can replicate wondrous grace of this land I see, whose image I carry to my grave when next I lay close to thee. End poem.
Great job, Laurent. Great job. Rex, you want to start us off?
Sure. The ease of thought would be that this rolls on that notion of loving the beauty of the landscape itself, but it goes a whole lot deeper than that, because the language writ holds on that thought of someone who has actually worked that land, that farmer, the one who has grown the beauty out of that land that feeds the populace, and understanding the notes of what that land gives as well as takes. And you get to know, as you walk until you get to know the every little tidbit, every mole hole, every little rock that walks within it, and everything else that streams is the background, the red sun, the orange of the moon, the glens, the vales, the valleys that are the backdrop, because that is what you see every day while you're going out there doing your dew, tilling the earth. This is what you would call one who is the salt of the earth, who understands that which is all natural and that which comes from it, and to that which he will then be received.
Nice comment, Rex. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Rex. Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I thought this was really beautiful. I like how it is about somebody who works the land and has a connection to the land, but I also like that it's about love and how that love of that person who has passed on and the memories shared, and how it's about knowing that you have to, like, I feel like it's about someone who has to continue to work in this life but continually looks forward to the next life when they'll be reunited with their true love. And I really like how you bring in the part about how they don't whip the horse and how they handle the horse, because it shows not only a connection to a land, but it shows a connection to the animal that helps to provide for them. And so just an excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Nice comment, Pam. And Sawa, how about you?
I love how you put yourself like part of everything, a small part of me in a merry stream, another flower, two blades. It's like how much you love nature. And I'm not sure about the illusion. Is it a reference to Greek? That's what you're trying, the heavenly Greek etymology, mythology, I meant, excuse me. That's something that you're trying to compare the earth to heaven. And that's where you said at the end in your auto notes, nature, that's something that we all have to return to. I have to read it one more time. It's really deep.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Ella. Laurent, I think this was an absolutely gorgeous work, a piece that you had done quite a while ago. And I'm surprised I have a comment on here, but I don't know. It must have been one of those moments. And for that, I am sorry. I mean, it's a beautiful, beautiful write all the way through. Wonderful imagery, a tale so well told, wonderful emotions well expressed all the way through. And yeah, it was just absolutely gorgeous. So what a wonderful job. And I'm glad you brought it back for us to read again. That's incredible. Nice work.
Thank you, G.
Timeless pieces. Okay. Now, Rex, I have one for you to read. And there we go. This is by Robbie's poetry. Imagine that.
Percussive Heartbeat by Robbie's poetry. This heart beats percussively to the rhythm of the universe and self-manifestation. It lives in a detestation of submission of what may be called fate, no matter what fate there may or may not be. This is not a question to be pondered by this thundering heart, this heart that seeks to do everything it needs to be free. I think you can hear it, beating with the heartbeat of universal rhythms as it seeks the best way to make its way to what it was meant to be. It seeks fulfillment in the most expedient path, but if pain comes along, it will do what it must to set itself free. It knows not what will set it free, but again, it wastes no time in thinking of philosophical idiosyncrasies. It does dive into the joyous vagaries of pondering, though, but it will not waste time to seek answers in abstractions and illusions. It will take the utmost direct course of action, seek out the most profound satisfaction, living a life impactful and filled with joy. End poem.
Nice job. Yeah.
I'm on mute. Great read, Red. I really like that. The heart beating percussively is a great way to introduce the rhythm of the universe and the self-manifestation that he discusses. Now, all through this, he speaks about the best way for the heart to make its way to what or where it was meant to be. And it's the expedient path, the knowledge that the heart will do whatever it needs to do to set itself free and doesn't waste too much time thinking about it. It has a tendency to dive, as he says, into the joyous vagaries or exploding, but will not waste time with abstractions and illusions. I thought it was a great piece and a great read, Rex. And Sawa, if you can get a little closer to that phone and give us a comment, I'd appreciate it.
She dropped. So sorry.
All right.
Then
and then I'll ask Pam to take over, please. Pam?
Yeah, I really like this poem. I like that he talks about, that he mentions the rhythm of the universe and how the heart follows along to this, and, you know, but searches for its way to be free, the heart that seeks to do everything it needs to be free. And then I like that how he says, I think you can hear it beating with the heartbeat of universal rhythms. I like how this whole poem is about, you know, finding your individual sense of fulfillment rather than finding what everyone thinks you need. I also really like the use of the word, the phrase, the joyous vagaries of pondering through, though, the joyous vagaries of pondering. I thought that was just a really just wonderful phrase there. And the whole idea that, you know, there's a certain freedom in just letting our mind wander. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. And Rex?
It's a thinking piece because of the, we'll not waste time on abstractions, illusions, and philosophical idiosyncrasies, but yet does walk into those. You hit that, the self-manifestation, the detestation, of fate in that first stanza, and then it hits on that thought, it will take the utmost direct course of action to seek out the most profound satisfaction, living a life impactful and filled with joy. There is philosophical note to it as well as the thought of self-determination, but in order to do that, you do have to ponder those abstractions, delusions, and the philosophical idiosyncrasies that walk within everything.
Most correct, my friend. Nice job. Jean, your comment, please.
Well, I thought it was a well-written piece by Robbie, and I thought it was nice and phrasing throughout. It was clever and well-written. So nice work, Robbie, and thanks so much for sharing with us tonight. Great job. Great. Okay. So, Pam, that brings me to you.
Yes.
Whenever
All
you're
right.
ready.
This is Rooms to Let by Jable McCady, and it goes like this. Sorry. I live alone and have spare rooms. A thought occurred one day. Why don't I make myself some cash by letting them for pay? I signed up for a renting site that matches hosts with guests. I can't believe how well it's done. I never would have guessed. It cost a bit to set things up, as all the beds are new. A desk and chair for every room. There are fresh curtains, too. I've had some lovely people stay from U.S. and Japan, from Britain, China, France, and Spain, Hong Kong, and Pakistan. I don't do meals or make them snacks, and thus my chores are few. I wash the sheets and clean the rooms, but that is all I do. I've useful money coming in. My rooms are often full. I've earned the title super host, and life is never dull. End poem.
Thank you so much, Pam. And thank you so much, Jabo, who has discovered the joys of the internet. I forget the name of the outfit that does all the arranging.
Airbnb.
I should know it. Excuse me?
Airbnb.
Yes, exactly. And given the fact that Janet has one of the most beautiful gardens I have ever seen, I imagine that the house reflects the gardens as well. So it's a perfect type of house for Airbnb. And they're not too cheap, so I'm glad to see that she's deriving some income from this. But more than that, the interest in putting pen to paper and giving us a fresh piece after she told me almost a year ago that she was pretty much out of inspiration for writing. So now we have fresh inspiration, and I do like that. Rex, please.
Yeah, it's when you've got a fairly decent-sized place, I guess, and the thought is you're alone with that, and, you know, life gets hard and things get sparingly. There are things to do, and this is one. it might cost you a little bit up front to make sure things are proper, like, you know, new beds, desk chair, and that type of thing. But in the end, it benefits both you and those who come to stay, because they'll find a lovely warm place, and it's not nearly as expensive as the hotels. Plus, you earn a little bit of money that helps out in the backside of life, and that is always a good thing, plus the enrichment that comes along with it, because obviously when you find friends doing this along the way, there are memories to cherish.
Thank you, Rex. And Pam, please.
It's good to see Jable writing again. As always, she has wonderful rhyme and flow here. I like that she gives us a peek into her world, and you know, I feel like I could see her earning the title super host. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Next comment. And Jean, please.
You didn't even know my name, guys. Did you catch that? I didn't even know my
name. That's right. I forgot it instantly and then remembered it instantly.
Jeez Louise. Yeah, you know, I'm not going to make that comment I was going to. I'll behave myself. But nothing made me smile as much as to see that Jable had put this up on our board, along with the one before it, too. It's been too long since I've seen her poetry. And, you know, I appreciated that. And I think it's a wonderful poem. Great rhythm and rhyme, as always, and on her part. And she says it's all true. So more power to her if she can make ends meet and, you know, do a little something nice for herself, then so be it. And, yeah, you just let them know, Jable, that they better take care of you or we're going to take care of them. Absolutely. You're not... Yeah,
so
I have that. I am. That's why you forgot my name. Anyway.
No, come on now. Jean and Janet are very, you know, sure. Come on.
Yeah. It's all good, Lauren. It's all good. Don't let me rattle your cage. I'm just playing.
Well, I'm rattling back,
yeah.
That's all.
You are? Oh, I wasn't rattling. I'm sorry. I forgot. I just figured you were kidding. But anyway, excellent piece. And it was fun. It was good to have. Let me see now. Okay. Now, Lauren, this brings me to you. And here we go. Oh, no, that's not it. What the hell am I doing? Wow. Okay, Lauren, here we go. This one's yours. I think. Yes.
I see it. All right. This is called Pray, Repent, Repeat by Kel Smiles. Church on Sunday morning, shine on, rise on knees in repentant prayer. Listen to the preacher talk of sin, singing along to gospel hymns or with a choir in the balconies. Attempt to forget the rude attitude when meeting people who wasn't liked simply because they looked different, or maybe they had a stranger accent. Gossip about them to all your friends, how much better you are to them. Talk doesn't hurt if you don't know the details of others' life struggles. Church on Sunday morning. Shine on, rise on knees in repentant prayer. Listen to the preacher talk of sin, singing along to gospel hymns over the choir in the balconies. Attempt to forget the night before, drunk, stoned on the bathroom floor, after dirty dancing at the local bar, with a stranger you met, cute as hell. Shots beer, shots drunk on your ass, drove home with them, shotgun seat. If no one knew then, you didn't cheat. Get your groove on with night moves. Church on Sunday morning. Shine on, rise on knees in repentant prayer. Listen to the preacher talk of sin, singing along to gospel hymns or with a choir in the balconies. You're not a hypocrite, not on Sunday. All you have to do is kneel and pray. The sins of the week are washed away. Don't matter how much you repeat. Go ahead, look down your nose at other expense, laughable circumstance. Have fun with friends, drunk at the bar, gossip, flirt. Enjoy the stranger's dance. Church on Sunday morning. Shine on. Rise on knees in repentant prayer. Listen to the preacher talk of sin, singing along to gospel hymns, or with a choir in the balconies. End poem.
Nice read. Nice job,
wow.
Kel.
It was. Pam, please.
Yeah, I thought this was a really thoughtful write. I really like attempt to forget the rude attitude when meeting people who wasn't liked simply because they looked different or maybe they had a stranger accent. The whole general message of, you know, not judging people if you don't know their situation, you don't know their life. And look at that. She even referenced the song Night Moves. Get your groove on with Night Moves. That was pretty cool. But that whole scene there was cool, and I like that she spoke about the hypocrisy that often is part of many people's attitudes. And so excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. It is a nice little play on words. The sins of the week are washed away. She writes it as in E-E-K. Of course, it is also E-A-K, an admission of the weakness perhaps that leads to the quote-unquote sins of the week. Rex, please.
It bites at the blatant hypocrisy of that which you think you can do, because it'll all be washed away as long as you go and get on your knees and pray and then get absolution from the box where you confess all of that which you've done. That kind of belies the thought within the angle itself. If you're going to do this, why bother going to church?
That's a great point. Why bother going to church? Who is perhaps a little suspicious of organized religion might think that it has to do with the control. Yes, you're a human being. Yes, you will do these things. We understand it. But you must come to us for forgiveness, because then you can go out with a light heart and repeat the activity. I'm not going to get into that. Who hasn't commented here?
Gene? Me. Yeah, I think Kel did a good job with this piece. I really did. I kind of listened to it, you know, and I'm going, pray, repent, and repeat. You know, it's a cycle. People get in there and they think, oh, just because I've asked forgiveness, I can do what I want again, you know, and it's absolutely true. And the powers that be, in a lot of cases, and I'm not going to point fingers because I know I'm in one of those categories I would point a finger at. You know, as long as you're dropping money in that collection plate, you can come back.
There you go.
Solution anytime. So shame on me for saying that, but I'm sure I'll be unpopular again for a different reason this week. But It really does, you know, sadly, it makes sense, you know. And I think that she laid it out there very, very well, you know, and, you know, put it out there for food for thought for everyone, you know.
You know, that's a good point, Gene. That's a good point. And, you know, not to point fingers at the Catholic Church, because they do ask for their tithe in a rather gentle, humble way. But some of the other organized, quote-unquote, religions that are non-taxable in this country that seem to pant at the thought of huge donor. You may be poor, you may have nothing, but if you dig up that $11,000 I need from you, good things will come to you. You know, you get into that, and oh boy.
Yep. Yeah, well, you know, it all kind of, to me, you know, as long as you're paying the price and putting it out there, you know, you're okay. We're going to still send you to heaven. We're going to get you that one-way ticket. Sorry, that's just me. Or if it's a Catholic church or any other church, I know I fit into one of the categories, and I'm not going to point fingers at anybody else's category.
I found it impossible to categorize you.
Yeah.
Should be a note above the door. Lasciate ogni speranza voi che entrate.
All right, what did you say?
Lasciate ogni speranza voi che entrate. Beware ye who enter here.
Yes, right. Beware.
That sums it
up. All right.
Okay. Oh, my God. Okie dokie, okie dokie. Oh, God, I don't even know where I am. The last one was that one. Laurent read that. Okay, so I'm at rec. Mr. Rec,
yes.
I have one for you. Here we go.
Gossip of Sarah by Blackbird. Smooth to curves, she treads with grace of a crystal stream with a gem-like face that reflects the innocence of sin, yet within her eyes a diviner flame thrives therein. Through the silent waves of a baitless fire, blushes of wonder, her eyelids smile with desire. All manly sight, with unquestionable right, believes she's the Juliet on a Valentine's night. Soft berry cheeks, too ripe to be white, being ripe her lips with Kiplani wine blessed. Red roses sleep in the veil of her breast, yet she can kiss red roses to spring white. The promise of love hangs on her lips like a pear, and lily flowers sprout in the mildness of her hair. Yet each lily is a blooming star, graced with the charming hues as glad peacock are. Oh, hark! The violets blab that her argent smile was lovelier made, to polish the bland night when the moon has strayed. Often when coral strains, the open bud bears meat. Softly is sung in measured steps, solemn and sweet. Step by step, like a soft flower chain, she danced with a glowing heart, a thirst yearning to fly. All the longings of soul and flesh, withering flowers, the rain, in one aspect meet within the gazer's eye. Like blooms of spring, stretch the land and seek the strand, with semblance her beauty does clearly expand. Beneath the sweet silence cloaking the maiden, oh, various fruits rejoice ripe in her garden. Yet no suitor battling with words seeks the honor to wed, a noiseless fairy tiptoeing from bed to bed. End poem.
Nice read.
Outstanding read. What a wonderful piece this is. The poet is from Uganda, but his writing has the, to me, the tone and the cadence, if not the precise language, of a Shakespearean rite. I was absolutely profoundly impressed by this piece. What a great poem. Pam, could you start us off, please?
Yeah, I thought this had some delightful and clever lines, like, all manly sight with unquestionable right believes she's a Juliet on a Valentine's night. And it's a wonderful imagery. I also like grace with charming hues as glad peacocks are. Oh, hark the violets laugh that her ardent smile was lovelier made. And it's really one of those rites that kind of throws you for a loop when you get the end and get to a noiseless fairy tiptoeing from bed to bed. It does have kind of the whole feel of Shakespeare. And the one with the, what's the one with Puck in it? A Midsummer's Night's Dream. That's what it kind of reminds me of. Mm-hmm. Because of the devious fairy. And, you know, so I like how this tells a story, and it comes across at first as very sensual, but then you realize it's all about the mischief that the fairy is causing. So just a clever write and very well done.
Oh, it is. I agree with you there. I especially like the lines in the first stanza, with a gem-like face that reflects the innocence of sin, that speaks to an object of perhaps sexual desire that doesn't know its own depth, doesn't realize its own effect on someone else. Yet within her eyes, a diviner flame thrives therein. There's something much deeper behind that look. Rex, please.
It's playful and humorous and offers up that dash of sensuality that walks one way, reading until you get to the bottom end, where you find out exactly who and what she is as the sinning part of this whole thing, because she is that one that graces each new bud and pollinating the next one that comes along. So that was a nice touch.
It was. This is a very skillful piece, I thought. Jean?
Oh, I thought this was great. I thought it was well done and very, what did I say? I don't know why I do that. I think it's well done. I think there's great imagery throughout, clever phrasing. I thought it was nicely penned. So great work, Black Bud, and I appreciate you joining our contest. It's definitely a great piece. There was one from our pre-written artist seduction program. Okay. Pam, I think you're going to get the last one for the night, unless I decide to scrunch another one in, and I can't see why I should do that. So, here we go. Ready when you are.
All right. This is I Taste Sin by Tara Solomons, and it goes like this. Your lips, claret dipped, iris bulbs, inviting, and I sin the angels inside me, dissipating, I sin. Was I always a mad carving of a Zella and nothing more? Is that why we fit every curve of mine with every curve of yours? Two moon biscuits, so young, so in love. More, always more, more than a gossamer thread of lust, more than the milk sheets between us. Always more, always. My Cheshire moon, will you taste me in full again? Full in halves or halves in full, will you taste me? Sink hungry teeth into cream skin, taste me, taste me. In and out, I breathe, fill ink lungs with carrot residue and charcoal dust. There's too much of you today, and I am still searching for lost space and misplaced identities, still searching for the I in you and the you in me, and the dusted memorabilia of a thousand memories, our snake tongues fight each other to sting. Time hiccups in the race mate of love. My nether lips part, blowing love notes on a flesh piccolo. And in and out, we move in slow waltz in a parallel universe. End poem.
Oh, there's some great read, by the way, Pam. There are some absolutely delicious lines in this, which I will let Rex address first.
Some great language in this. I breathe, fill ink lungs with carrot residue and charcoal dust. My Cheshire moon, will you taste me in full again? Let's see, what a thread of lust more than milk sheets between us. Two moon biscuits. I got a kick out of that one. And then the bottom end with, what was it? Nether lips part, blowing love notes on a flesh piccolo. In and out, in and out. Nether is something nobody uses anymore, and there was one old one. They used to refer it to as the nether nene, and this one kind of walks that same line, but imparts a nice tonal view with the piccolo as the fruited loom to passage.
Laurent,
it got real quiet.
Yes, it did.
Yes, it did.
Laurent,
is he mutating?
I'm sorry. I was on mute. I beg your pardon. It's Eugene.
Oh, did Pam come? Pam, did you come?
No, I didn't. I thought
I'm
this had
sorry.
Some...
I beg your pardon. I beg your pardon.
Oh, no problem. Right. I thought this had some beautiful and creative imagery.
Yes.
You got permission to say more if you want.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure because I heard Phil start talking, so I thought maybe I was interrupting.
I was on mute. I screwed things up. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. All right. So I really like sink hungry teeth into cream skin, and then the question of taste me, and more, always more than a gossamer thread of lust, more than milk sheets between us, always more, always. I like how she repeats the lines and certain phrases in line, so there's a sense of real desire, of want, of a carnal need, but more than just the carnal, there's also the wanting a connection, not only the physical, but the emotional. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you so much, Pam. Sorry I missed you. Jean, your comment?
Did you comment?
I thought I did. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little erratic with the late hour. You're right, I didn't really comment. Lines that absolutely I adore. More, always more than a gossamer thread of lust, more than the milk sheets between us, always more, always. And the there's too much of you today, and I'm still searching for lost space and misplaced identities. Still searching for the I in you and the you in me. That's a fascinating way about talking about a state of mind or a state of existence. The line, our snake tongues fight each other to sting, is excellent. And then that wonderful penultimate stanza that Rex already referred to. Just a wonderful piece. Now it's you, Gene.
Now it's my turn. You are correct. You are correct. I thought this was an intriguing piece. You can see my buttons weren't really working when I was going over the pieces ahead of time because you never would think I had. So that was pretty interesting. I think that's like the third one I did that to this go-round. But Pam, you did a great job reading that, and I thought it was a well-written piece and, you know, clever and definitely captivating. So what I can say is thank you very much for putting the piece in, Tara Solomon, and yep. Now, I had four carryovers tonight, and I moved them over to Pam's board for Wednesday. We had PRM, Gypsy 13, Linda MB, and Cat Coney. So there are the four poems that will start out next Wednesday's show. And I want to thank everyone who wrote for the contests and the carryovers that you've been patient to hear read on the air. All right. Thank you for co-hosting with us, or with me. Pam, Rex, thanks for hanging. Appreciate it very much. Thomas, I missed you tonight. I don't know where you are, but I noticed you were gone. it was a great show and wonderful poetry. Now, tonight, after midnight, we have Part Sinner, Part Saint. Tonight we'll be with Victoria Frost and Pam Ray. And Faziana has a couple weeks off. Tomorrow is it our free weekend, Pam?
I forget. Sorry.
I think it's our free weekend. If not, well, Gray Eyes will be around it. Sunday we have Rex. I'm in rhyme with Rex. Rex, what do you got going on Sunday?
Underground, Before the Invasion. A number of English songs between 1960 and 65, and they all feature one thing in particular that binds them all together.
The old nice. British.
Oh, yeah, there's a little Lulu in there. There's some neo-Christian and the Crusaders. A whole lot of bands probably nobody has ever heard of, but they all have one thing in common.
Oh, yeah? What is that, right?
All number one, maybe?
I can't tell you.
I know you have to go to the party to find out.
Just to figure it out.
Secret. Works for me. So I look forward to that. And it is a free day tomorrow. Sunday night, Hearts of LMP. Monday is the Garden of Enlightenment with Louie Wild Duck, followed by After Midnight with Rex and Pam. There's Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters. And that is, what are we doing Tuesday, Pam? Pam left. See how she leaves me in the middle of everything? Thanks, Pam. Appreciate it. Anyway, we have something happening on Tuesday we always do. Hopefully I'm not in charge of it because then I would feel really silly. But then again, I felt silly before. Anyway, I love you all of you very much. You have a great night. Stay out of trouble. Don't do anything I wouldn't do. If you do, write it down. Let me know how it was. Oh, it's not Wednesday, is it? Oh, shame on me. Laurent, I'll teach you my name in just a couple minutes. I'm just saying.
You got it.
Yep.
Good night, all.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for sharing your poetry. Good night.